Radio 14 KMHL. Today we get to welcome a prominent figure in Minnesota politics, Senator Erin Murphy, as she is the majority leader in the Minnesota Senate. Senator Murphy, how are we doing today?
I'm doing very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing very well indeed. You know, we finally dug out of all the snow and we're hoping for a warm up because, you know, right once we get into spring, then all the snowfalls that we've been missing out on all winter. So, yeah, really fun stuff.
That's right. Although, you know, it's been good to get a little extra moisture. And that's a good thing in the spring. So it's been more cold than I would like this time of year, but it was a welcome relief.
Yeah, no doubt. Definitely looking forward to the moisture, especially for all of our area farmers that have been, you know, needing that for sure over the last few months. But we finally got it now. But today we're going to be talking about a number of topics, including a bill aimed at assisting individuals burdened by medical debt. We're also going to be talking about the fight against hospital closures in greater Minnesota, talking about junk fees added to bills without consumer knowledge, also exploring the crisis in ambulance services for greater Minnesota. First of all, let's talk about the bill aimed at assisting individuals burdened by medical debt. Can you provide an overview of the proposed bill and its key objectives?
Sure. Last year, your listeners may recall, there was a news story coming out about people being denied access to care because they had some medical debt. They'd incurred medical debt. And this is, you know, and none of us, you know, want to carry debt, and we, of course, want to pay off our debts. But what we're learning in Minnesota is that people often have health insurance, but their insurance, for some reason or another, whether it is because they have high deductibles or they end up doing something out of network that they don't expect, that they end up with a bill that is much larger than they would anticipate. And that was being used by hospitals in particular as a reason to deny people for their care, for themselves or their families. And that's what we're trying to fix.
How do you anticipate this bill will impact individuals currently struggling with medical expenses?
So we want to change the terms, if you will, for Minnesotans and their healthcare providers by making sure that if you incur a debt, that it is not counted in such a way that you're denied care. This is legislation that Senator Liz Bolden from the Rochester area is working on with a member of the House, Liz Ryer, who actually used to work in the health insurance industry, along with Attorney General Ellison. And our objective here is to make sure that when you're getting care, like if you've had an accident or a serious disease and you incur medical debt, that doesn't become a burden for your family going forward or for your access to care. It is a complicated bill. It has, you know, made it through all of the hearings to give it a look from a healthcare perspective, from a legal perspective, and we expect to move that through in the next 7 weeks or so. We want to make sure that people can get the care that they need where they're living, and medical debt, as we know, has become a really significant issue for families across the country, including here in Minnesota, and we want to make that easier for people.
Now, do you think it'll be hard or pretty easy to garner support for this bill, considering the financial implications it may have on healthcare institutions?
I know that Liz Bolden has been working with all of the interests, and that is our practice in the legislature, is to make sure that as a bill is getting heard, and I think it's been heard in three different committees, in Health and Human Services, in the Commerce Committee, in the Judiciary Committee, that it is getting a fair hearing and a fair airing so that people who support it and people who have questions or concerns or opposition have their voices heard and those issues can be accommodated in the legislation. And I know she's done a lot of alterations to the bill to earn more support in order to get it in a position to pass and support Minnesota families.
And that's a good segue into our next topic regarding hospital closures in greater Minnesota. Could you outline the current challenges faced by hospitals in greater Minnesota that have led to these closures?
So I think there are a number of things that are happening that are driving the closures, but primarily, and we are seeing closures of hospitals and the closure of full segments of care within hospitals. And it's happening both in the district, in the places where, like in St. Paul, where I live, and in greater Minnesota, but we're feeling it acutely, I think, in greater Minnesota. So what I see happening primarily are the consolidation of hospitals and the services that they're offering. So the large systems like Ascensia or the Mayo Health System, et cetera, are, I think, consolidating their services in certain places and taking them away from other places, whether it is by closing hospitals, closing intensive care units, closing labor and delivery systems. And it is having a real impact on people and where they live and where they get their care. And I spent a fair amount of time in the fall in places like Albert Lea and Northfield, where they are losing either services or the cost of care is getting in the way of access for people. And the stories that I heard in Albert Lea in particular were very troubling as they're losing their hospital. And the providers that were working there, and they're not able to get, you know, they're reporting they're not able to get appointments in other community area hospitals. Some people are going to Iowa to get their primary care. Some people are waiting to get the care that they need in such a way that they're finding out that they have a serious disease, a serious cancer. And at least from my perspective, and I grew up in a little town in Wisconsin, access to health care is something that we need regionally and in our communities across the state. And if you can't deliver a baby, if you're pregnant, if you can't get mental health care close by and you have to go a long way in order to get care, your family member needs to get care. It really undermines that sense of the place we live and the home that we love. And these closures are a real trouble for Greater Minnesota in particular. So back in 2019, there was work done to try and address this issue. And we're coming back to that law and strengthening it to make sure that there are public hearings. And if there aren't public hearings, that there is a repercussion for the hospital who is making choices without a fair public debate. For the people who live in those communities.
Is there a role that local communities play in combating hospital closures and maintaining healthcare infrastructure?
Absolutely. I was in Marshall late last fall, back in November, I believe, and spent some time with the mayor in Marshall and talked a lot about the work of the leaders of the hospital in that area. And yes, I do believe that between the clinics and the hospitals and the people who actually work there, there's important work to be done to make sure that our facilities are open and available to us. I have a lot of respect for local hospital administrators, for local directors of nursing, and the work that they do to make sure that the hospitals are thriving in communities.
Now, piggybacking off of that, as we then move on into ambulance services for Greater Minnesota, can you provide an overview of the current challenges facing ambulance services in Greater Minnesota?
Yeah, we have a paramedic who was elected to the legislature in the Minnesota Senate in the last election. Her name is Judy Seeberger, and she has been working with members of the House and the Senate across the state as this issue has emerged. And I think that, you know, she will remind me there was a working group put together in the fall, has members of both the House and the Senate, Democrat and Republican alike, who are working to address this issue. And she is the one to say, we're not going to fix it in 1 year. This is an issue that has been brewing for some time. Local governments have just recently been raising the issue up. Hospital systems have been just recently raising the issue up. And I think we have to do both some policy change and the work to oversee the work of ambulances and the people who do that work. And we have to provide some pilot money, some money so we can test some things out so that when we come back into the budget year next year, we're in a position to create a more accountable system, one that we understand that is meeting the needs of people. Because, again, if you're in a farm accident in Greater Minnesota and southwestern Minnesota, you want to make sure that you can get to the care that you need. And farm accidents happen. We know that. So we want to make sure we have ambulance services that are serving Minnesotans across the state.
And what factors contribute to the financial strain experienced by ambulance services operating in these regions?
I think there are multiple factors, and that's why we have to look deeply at the policy here. Because ambulance services are delivered in different ways. Some of them are connected to hospital systems. Some of them are connected to local government. Some of them are driven by volunteer systems. tied to local governments. The reimbursement rates, both state and federal, play a role in this. Who is staffing an ambulance is playing a role in this. How paramedics can interact with people when they get to a scene or a home is playing a role in this. So it is about public policy, about who are the people delivering the care, how we pay for that care. All of those things are factors, which is why I think it is a complex issue that is going to take us and our attention both this year and next to make sure that we're really delivering on a commitment to people.
Sounds like it's going to take a lot of collaboration between ambulance services, healthcare providers, and community leaders to address this crisis effectively.
That's right. And we're at our best when we approach a problem in that way, because none of us alone can solve these thorny problems. And it is our experience in Minnesota over and over again that when we work together, whether it's community leaders, policymakers, business leaders, it is our experience that when we bring our voices together, we find better solutions. And I'm really proud of the work that I see my colleagues doing on this issue, because that is how they're operating. They want to find a solution or solutions that will support communities across the state.
Our final topic of discussion, once again with Senate Majority Leader Aaron Murphy, we're talking about the initiative to eliminate junk fees added to bills without consumer knowledge. What are some examples of these junk fees?
You know, the one that comes to mind so quickly is when you buy tickets to a sporting event or a concert. You think you're paying for the tickets, and then when you get your bill, there are additional fees that you didn't even realize you were going to pay. But we're seeing that happen in, you know, like DoorDash, in buying products online, in a variety of ways. We're seeing hidden fees attached to bills in such a way that you're paying much more than you realize when you're buying something. And the data that we're looking at suggests that families are paying up to $3,000 a year in hidden junk fees. We think those should be transparent. People should know what they're buying. They should know and expect what they're going to get charged for something, just like if you were at the grocery store. That should be the case. And so this is another complicated piece of legislation led by Lindsey Port, Senator Port, that is making its way through the Senate.
Now, do you anticipate any resistance from industries accustomed to adding these fees?
Sure. I think there's always resistance when people find a way to do their business. But I think Minnesotans would agree that the charges that we are being asked to pay should be clear to us. You know, this is an issue in healthcare. We know that. But it's an issue in many other industries now, you know, when you're buying, especially when you're buying things online. And we should know. We should have the opportunity to know. We have the right to know what we're going to be charged. And that's what we're trying to accomplish.
Very good. Senator Aaron Murphy, I appreciate the time here today. And it looks like you have a couple days off, right, with the spring Easter holiday break?
Yep. The legislature is in recess. We went into recess last night at 5 p.m. We're back at Tuesday at noon. So it is a brief recess. And I told my colleagues to rest up, because when we come back on Tuesday, we're going to start moving again, and fairly quickly. We only have about 7 weeks left and a fair amount of work to do for the people of Minnesota.
Looking forward to seeing the work that comes out of the Capitol. I appreciate the time here once again, and we'll talk to you again down the road.
Thanks for having me.
That's Senator Aaron Murphy, Senate Majority Leader here in Minnesota, joining us here on Radio 14 KMHL.